Christopher Long, and you're listening to a Digital Dialogue Podcast, episode number 3. Our topic today is sincerity, and I'm happy to be joined by Ryan Wetzel and Matt Meyer and Alan Gorky, who are all members of my TLT Summer Faculty Fellowship team. So today we're going to talk about sincerity, and this came up because of a comment that Alan made to the first, I think, podcast that we did. And you were asking, really, how important sincerity is in the whole process of thinking about dialogue and genuine dialogue.
Yeah. Right?
And so I wanted to just say a comment about how sincerity plays out in Socratic politics, at least in the Platonic dialogues, because it seems to be very important for Socrates that the person he's talking to say what they mean and mean what they say and defend a kind of position, even if they decide that you're going to sort of defend a specific position, that you sort of defend it. And so I think that's something that's an important aspect of dialogue, whether it be digital or not. And it's certainly the case that when there's a disjunction between words and deeds, it's erosive of politics and erosive of dialogue. So this goes back maybe to some of the things we've been talking about with regard to trust as well. So I don't know, what did you guys think about the sort of role of sincerity in dialogue and discussions and in politics in general?
I'm just wondering, as you were just talking there, I was wondering about the interaction between sincerity and honesty, because whenever you're saying you mean what you say and you say what you mean, that sort of thing. So am I being... Maybe this is getting back to openness, too.
Right.
Like, am I being completely honest with what I'm saying? And am I maybe reinforcing that and saying, well, this is what I truly believe, not this is what I think you want me to say?
Right. Right.
And I think that can relate, you know, come out in social media.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, and maybe we'll talk about the sort of way this plays out in social media at some point, because there's a whole way of constructing profiles and things like that you have to think about how you're presenting yourself. But an important aspect of politics is appearance and how one appears. And, we often, with marketing, with propaganda, there's a way of manipulating that appearance, and that's something that I think is problematic from a political standpoint. How is somebody presenting a facade of something, but not there's no substance sort of to back that up?
Yeah. Do you think that's because what we've been trained to expect is this kind of dichotomy, like you're with me or you're against me, you're conservative or you're liberal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, with any particular issue, you're expected to have a very strong opinion. Say, for example, pro-choice, pro-life. I mean, you can't... It's
right.
Hard to really say... Give your honest opinion about that.
Right.
Because I could give my honest opinion right now and I'd probably piss some people off. But, I mean, the fact is I'm kind of in the middle about the whole thing. I mean, I think abortion is a very terrible thing.
Right.
But I don't think that you can legislate it out, because then people do back alley stuff. And
right. Well, I think, you know, it's the manner. It's the manner in how you're giving it too. Sincerity, if you truly feel so strong one way or the other, and basically you're saying I'm right, you're wrong, that's it. Like, then you kind of closed off dialogue, you know.
Right.
Whereas what Obama did at Notre Dame was said, this is a dialogue. This is an ongoing thing. People kind of wait for him to say, you know, how he's going to lay out his support for one side, you know.
Right.
They were ready to fight, and he, you know, just said, it's a dialogue that's going to continue. And I think that was a masterful job.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting also about that is, and this calls into question what I was saying, I think, at the beginning in some ways. So I think one of the things, and maybe we'll talk about this in another podcast, is that the ability to imagine the other side, what the other person is thinking and saying, is crucial to the whole process of dialogue. Certainly in classes and things like that, you often try to get students to articulate a position with which they disagree, just so that they can get practice in imagining the other side and constructing a good argument from that. But I think that it's important to be able to imagine what another person might be thinking, and to give credit give credit to that point. And so I think the ambiguity of a dichotomous way of thinking about things, right, this fact that you have oppositions and a yes or a no, and we want to open up a gray area where you can live in that ambiguity a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I really like how the way you put that, Matt, because it really is that space. If you've already decided, then why you're not going to open yourself up to dialogue? If it's an absolute no, and I'm not going to believe you, and if you disagree with me, you're absolutely wrong. Kind of, what's the point of dialogue? It becomes a shouting match at that point.
Well, you've instantly devalued the person you're talking with. Mm-hmm. And that comes across. You know, we've all had conversations with people like that, and there's really not going to be a dialogue. You know, there's just,
well, and this point, the part of the what you're pointing out is that a dialogue is a process, it's a road from one place to another. So if everybody is stuck with what they already believe, mm-hmm. there's never going to be any movement in a direction. And when Socrates says in the quotation that I used in the recent blog post. Was that you need to use your words to not in order to gratify, just to gratify, but use it to pursue what is best. And so this joint pursuit of what is best is what sort of has to animate a dialogue if it's going to have a movement and be productive. Mm-hmm. It can't just be two people stuck in a certain position.
So having a dialogue means also having a certain amount of empathy for the other side, or at least an empathy for the sake of argument?
Well, right. I mean, I think but this actually brings up an interesting point about Socrates, in the sense that he seems to... His idea, at least in the Gorgias, for example, about dialogue is more what... the more technical language would be dialectic. That is, that one person takes the yes position, the other person takes the no position, and then they have it out. And this was a standard practice in Plato's Academy, if that's how they worked out problems. Now, one might wonder whether that's a good strategy, whether that's really dialogical, or whether it's not dialectical in the sense that, you know, you present your position, I try to refute it, and then you try to refute my position, and we sort of decide, well, which is the best. Mm-hmm. There's some positive things about that. But I'm not sure if it's the kind of dynamic dialogue that I think is politically powerful. But Ryan, your point about empathy is an important one, and I think that's something that maybe we can return to too, about how can digital media help us imagine the position of others, mm-hmm. imagine our way into the position of others. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I ask students to construct an argument with which they disagree, I don't do that just for the sake of doing it. I want to sort of cultivate those habits of empathy, of imagination.
Yeah. I was talking with Andrew about something earlier, and he was saying how psychologically it's easier to point a gun at somebody and pull the trigger than it is to walk up to them and stab them or to beat them to death. I mean, one way or the other... Sound like I'm talking about death.
That's a great topic to have today.
Yeah, great. I'm totally in an excited, upbeat mood. But my point is that it's that kind of proximity, and maybe that gets to the point of empathy too. Like how it's easy to do flame wars on discussion boards or to leave nasty comments on a blog.
Right.
But if you hear somebody, then they become more of a person. If you see them and see their plight, see their pictures, then maybe there's more of that just animal connection between, like, maybe the instincts kick in and you're thinking, well, that's a human and I'm a human and maybe I shouldn't be doing harm.
Well, that brings up the next issue, which I think, how does this play itself out in digital media? Are there certain forms of digital expression that help with the issue of empathy, mm-hmm. and the issue of sincerity? Does video do it in a different way because you're seeing face, you're seeing faces and you're seeing gestures, mm-hmm. Than, you know, posting to a blog where there's just words and it seems somehow disembodied in a certain way?
Yeah, and, you know, with looking at the pros and cons, I mean, the pros of a digital dialogue are that you might engage people who otherwise would not. Let's say if you're talking about a face-to-face debate, some people just not inclined to do that very well. They're not as quick on their feet. But in a written format, a back and forth, if they're being sincere,
right.
They may be stronger because they can put their points in text,
right?
You know, and do a much better job that way of participating in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of it is, come back to sincerity. I mean, have a great example is like an email where someone writes something sarcastically. Well, right. You can't tell sarcasm in text. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're all face-to-face, it's instantly known that something was sarcastic and put in the right context. Right. But, you know, I've seen situations where a sarcastic email, it took a half a day to sort out what someone was really trying to yeah. say. So I think that goes right. back to, you know, what...
Right.
What some of the dynamics of the digital dialogue.
Well, and I think, I mean, I'd be interested, Ryan, in your experience with video, because that's certainly much more dynamic, and you do have that more, potentially more personal interaction.
Right, yeah. Well, one thing that we deal with a lot in the digital commons, what we help faculty do is they'll be teaching online courses, and they'll say that this feels really impersonal to them, and they want to somehow give it a more personal touch so that the students get to know them. What we end up doing is recording a series of videos with them in it so that they get their face and they get their sort of actions out there towards the students, and the students can get to know them somewhat. So I think mm-hmm. in that sense, if it's unlikely that there will be any sort of face-to-face conversation or interaction, that video really lends itself as almost the next best thing. So I think it's really useful for that kind of thing.
And I also think, I mean, one thing that plays into this is the question of the profile, the online identity. Uh-huh. And Matt, I know you were telling me about sort of best practices with things like VoiceThread and other things where you know you have a picture of yourself and you know make sure that you can be seen in a certain way. So this somehow is related to the question of identity, and how that plays into, you know, sincerity and genuine dialogue. I mean, I was thinking about a radio lab episode that I was listening to, where they were arguing, they had a debate whether TV or radio was the more intimate, or was the better medium. And they were talking about that actually radio, in a certain sense, is more intimate for a variety of kinds of reasons. Hmm. And so I'm interested also in this podcast medium that we're using now, also as a way of what do we gain from that? What do we lose from it? Uh-huh.
What do we gain, or what do others?
Or what does dialogue? Yeah, how does the podcast form potentially cultivate dialogue in a different way than, let's say, responses to blog posts and things like that?
Or I guess we'll bring the video into it once we start
right.
Doing that. We didn't talk about the videos yet.
No, we haven't talked on the podcast about it. So one of the things we're thinking about doing, and we'll have to play this out in the next few weeks, is using YouTube to introduce some concepts about politics, about justice, and other kinds of things, and using that as a way to reach out to other people and see what kinds of responses we get. The idea behind that is that Socrates believed that if we can ask people to think about and to respond to the question, what is justice, what is temperance, what is piety, then you're already, on the certain sense, moving them in the direction of that ideal, mm-hmm. even if you don't have a grasp of what that is.
Well, that makes sense in response to the discussion we had about what dialogue is that it's the journey,
right?
And just starting that with the question maybe starts people on that journey about thinking about it.
Yeah. So look forward to that. We'll see if we can get together.
Originally, when you were asking that question, I thought what you were saying with justice specifically is that justice inherently has this kind of reflective process where you have to be constantly asking yourself, am I practicing justice in what I'm doing?
Yeah. I think it probably does.
Is that the case would you say that's the case for all the forms of excellence or all the virtues, is that one must constantly be asking themselves, am I practicing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, justice may be a particular issue insofar as it may be the virtue of all virtues. But the way that I would put it would be, you know, whatever specific questions you're asking yourself, it's always within the context. Is the life I'm leading a good life, and good in the sense of sort of oriented toward the best, and also fulfilling? Mm-hmm. So that's the broader question that has to sort of be asked all the time,
yep.
and answered not just in theoretical terms but lived. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the real challenge of the practice of Socratic politics. But I want to shift gears maybe, and we can have this as be our kind of concluding topic, which is the relationship between sincerity and playfulness. So we were talking a little bit about about playfulness, role playing, other mm-hmm. kinds of things. Alan, you were pointing us to Chad Vader on the yes. on the video in one of your comments. So, what do you guys think about the relationship between playfulness and sincerity, or even playfulness and dialogue? Is there a place for playfulness?
Well, let me bring up the Chad Vader
okay.
thing. I left like five different potential topics, and I thought that would be the one where you'd be like, "No, Alan, you're just off your rocker. This doesn't really fit into the podcast." But it's the one you picked up.
Well,
on,
you
so.
Are off your rocker, but that's
okay. Well, thank you, I guess.
That was to be playful.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. So Chad Vader is Darth Vader's less successful brother. He's a day store manager at like a grocery store, or day shift manager at a grocery store. And he uses his force powers and lightsabers, and the grocery store is actually Empire Groceries. But in this video that I'm particularly talking about, there's another video called David After the Dentist, where this kid is just like, he's just getting off his anesthesia, he's had some dental work done, he has some stitches, and his head's rolling around in the back, and he's like, "Is this real life? I have two fingers, I have four fingers," And
I've seen that video. I always end up feeling a little bit just bad for that kid. You know, more than a little bit, poor guy. But
so
it
the
is
people,
funny though. Yeah. It is funny. I have empathy.
So the people who make the Chad Vader videos did a spoof of David After Dentist, where Chad Vader is sitting in the back seat and just had surgery done to his vent, which is his breathing apparatus in the front, and he says pretty much the exact same lines, but. But the quote that comes to mind is that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So they think that the first video is funny, so then they make right. another video that's also funny that kind of rides the coattails in a way.
Right.
Most of the Chad Vader stuff has gotten like maybe 200,000 views, which is still a lot. Mm-hmm. This particular one has like 8.5 million. Oh, all right, six million some.
But I mean, so then, and as I try to suggest in my response, I mean, okay, that's all well and good, but is that what is dialogical about that? Right? Mm-hmm. There's a mimetic dimension. You're mimicking something. You're adding something of your own. Maybe you're bringing. I'm willing to think of this as a conversation, as mm-hmm. a kind of dialogue, but I worry about this. You know, these memes that sort of come up,
yeah.
and then they're just, you know, one person playing off the another and. And so, to what end is there an end? Maybe it's just playful, mm-hmm. and but I want to think about playfulness as serious in a certain way, right?
Yeah.
Not earnest in a heavy way, but there's an important aspect. Playfulness is, I think, politically and philosophically important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we philosophers tend to be very serious and very uptight, and you know. If it's not heavy, then it's not important.
Well, let me bring up a couple of other points then. We talked up before about breaking down that kind of dichotomy, right? And I don't know if you've seen, and I forget which video it is, but it's like Obama giving a press corps dinner where he's like, he rips on himself and he rips on his opponents and like he just has all these really funny things in there that are all topical. I think a lot of times playfulness can break down barriers between people who might be stuck.
Yeah. No, right.
So it kind of lubricates, lubricates the dialogue a bit.
Yeah, it definitely can. I think it opens up new possibilities for discussion. Now, with the Obama thing, it's, you know, most of his self-deprecating humor is about how great he is.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is, of course, you know, a win-win for him. He gets to make fun of himself, but also he's just Superman. So you gotta, and of course, we also don't want to be naive about the real damaging dimension of humor,
sure.
the way humor can say things in ways that is destructive of dialogue. Mm-hmm. But there is a way of playing, I think, that opens up a space and does lubricate the dialogue.
Yeah, almost to the point where it's saying, "Here are some issues. We know that they're issues. They're kind of ridiculous."
Right.
Maybe I said something that was really stupid.
Right.
Let's get that out of the way, and then maybe we can have the sincere conversation as part of that.
It's also part of this feeling exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that may be something because I've done some writing on playfulness in Plato's writings, and in particular with the figure of Socrates. like when he says he's willing to dance naked for a person if he'll just talk to him, and other kinds of playful things. That might be something we could draw on for the video thing. Not necessarily we're going to have a naked Socrates. Okay, let's not go out of control. But certainly draw on that playfulness, mm-hmm. and then might be able to invite others to join in that play and have something positive come out of that. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this pre-July 4th. Podcast. Thank you guys for.
Yeah, I'm surprised we're all here.
I know. I'm glad we're all here.
Yeah, that was kind of nice.
Enjoy the fireworks if you guys are going to see them. Yep. And we will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.